Welcome to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm your host, Stephanie, and our podcast is brought to you by our partner, Zogenix. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and our goal is to be informative and entertaining. Today's episode is definitely informational. I am speaking with one of our partners, Ultragenix. Let me introduce you to Dr. Emil Kakas. He is the CEO and president of Ultragenix. Also joining us is the Vice President of Global Patient Advocacy and Patient Engagement, Jessica Riviere. Ultragenix has been a leader in pharmaceutical research by transforming good science into great medicine for rare genetic diseases. While I know we have international listeners, please note that this podcast episode is intended for U.S. members of the Mito Action community. Dr. Kakas, can you tell us the history of Ultragenix and how it all began?
Beginning Ultragenix really starts in around 2009. At that time, I had left BioMarin, where I did a number of development programs for rare diseases and achieved a number of approvals. And I spent a year working on a foundation called the EveryLife Foundation. But during that year, I had so many parents coming to me trying to develop treatments for their kids. And I realized that there are too many diseases left untreated, and I probably need to go back and do more. And so coming out of retirement, I decided to start Ultragenix to work on rare and ultra rare diseases, to take everything we've learned from the past and pull a team together of highly experienced rare disease drug developers and see if we couldn't develop many treatments for disease and to do it faster and more efficiently if possible. And so we set a goal. We founded the company in 2010 and set a goal in 2011 to get 10 approvals or 10 treatments developed, in 10 years. And we got very close to that with approvals for multiple products in our first 10 years. So that was the main goal, get back and treating rare disease that other people are not treating and to use every bit of skill we have to do it well, but to do it with an ethical moral bent, that is to make sure we're taking care of patients and doing it in the right way, both in early access, supporting access post-approval, and also in how we work with the patient community all throughout the process of drug development. And we wanted to make it a real relationship, one where we learn deeply about what's going on for patients, which will help us design and develop drugs more efficiently for rare disease patients.
And I definitely feel that that is one thing that Ultragenix does incredibly well, and that is develop that patient relationship. And you definitely, from my workings with your team, I have felt that you are working for and with the patients. And it's not just the, we've decided to develop this, I hope you like it. You are asking, what is it that you need? How can we help you? And in the sense, build that community that you have where patients can get together and brainstorm and be part of a listening session with you and your team to really spell it out. What is needed for patients to have sometimes not a successful cure, but just a treatment that allows a better quality of life. And I think that's phenomenal because, as we know, diabetes is well managed, right? People can live a great life with a managed disease. And sometimes that's the best option right now. So I'm really thankful for the approach and the thought you guys put into Ultragenix and tackling the rare and ultra rare, because that's a much forgotten box in the back of the closet.
So yes, because they are so rare, I would just one thing, having humility, realize how little people know is really important. And one of the key principles of this is to learn directly from patients, not from doctors, really. The doctors do know a lot, but we learn more when we go to patients, especially in the ultra rare diseases where the impressions of doctors sometimes don't capture what's really going on. And so part of our whole company and approach has been to really make sure we're going deep into understanding diseases so that we make good decisions as we develop the treatments.
Wow. So what drew or moved Ultragenix to the FAOD community inside the rare disease community? How was that something that you sort of pinpointed as a good building block for you?
Well, I'm always looking for myself and our team for situations where an academic investigator has discovered something and is trying to get it developed, but no company cares, right? And there are a lot of situations like that where things are just languishing and sitting there. In this case for for the FEOD, I was on a listserv with Jerry Mockley, who works in FEOD, and he was sending a note to all the doctors out there that he's recruiting for a trial of trihypnoin. And I actually thought trihypnoin had been approved like years before. And he said, no, never approved. And so I asked Jerry, do you need help? Because I have a company now and maybe we would work on this. And he said, we definitely could use help. And he was struggling getting an FDA grant. He's been putting pieces together, but power of a company with enough people and money to actually drive it was valuable. So he told me he was very interested in the help. I went out to Pittsburgh and he told me about two cases and those were compelling. And we decided to jump in to see if we could help. Now the combo is very unusual. It's nature because it was an oil. And that sometimes makes companies, you know, walk away from it. But my view is if it can help someone, you know, as it can help them, then it's something that should be developed. And That's how we got started in LCFEOD. I certainly was aware of them, but I had not been connected to a real treatment option. And Dr. Charlie Rowe's work on trihypnoin was what the years, at that time, 12 years of using it in the clinic in serious patients got us interested in saying, you know, this is something that needs to get finished. Someone needs to help this get out there because doing it one by one means a lot of patients are not getting treated.
Right. And Dr. Rockley, what a wonderful partner to have on this adventure. He is absolutely committed to his patient community. So awesome that both of you have the same mindset of how can we help? So I love that. I love when we work with Dr. Rockley. He's actually going to be presenting on our expert series coming up. So always great information that he shares. This might be more for you, Jessica, but what are the ways in which Ultragenyx is supporting patient education surrounding the rare diseases that you support? Because you obviously support more than one. So what are some of the ways?
We really tailor that to the patient communities that we work with. There are some that are very actively engaged and we enter partnerships that are very easy, and there are those that we kind of need to bring on a journey with us to help understand what that mutual benefit can be. What does it mean to be a partner with a company like Ultragenyx? What does that mean for the patient community? And really, how valuable their experience and their insight is to us to help, you know, inform and develop therapies that are meaningful to them. So I would say from a Mito Action and this community, we have a patient leadership council. That's something that meets four times a year. It's representative. It has representatives from both the US and Canada. And there are care partners and there are also people living with FAOD that help inform, you know, what are the resources that the community needs? What types of outlets should we provide those resources? Is it an online thing? Is it a brochure? Is it a podcast? You know, this today's podcast is a part of a big kind of education drive that we're kicking off with Mito Action that has a whole variety of kind of different program types that's going to happen leading up to the Mito Action conference. So it really is dependent on the dynamics of the community. But there's always opportunity for partnership. And, you know, the community's insights and experience is so invaluable to us. We couldn't be successful without that partnership. You know, there's lots of things you can read from an academic perspective, but really understanding what does that mean for your daily life? Mm-hmm. How does that impact, you know, the choices you have to make in your life, some of the barriers to some of the things you'd want to do, but you can't do because of the condition you live in. So it's really helping understand all of those nuances, not just saying, hey, I live with X disease, but what does that mean for me in my daily life? And what are those aspirations that you have? And how do those change over kind of your life cycle? You know, caring for a child who's 8 with a rare disease versus someone who's 25 what does that mean? And are the choices different? And are the needs different? And so really trying to work with communities across that kind of continuum to understand what the experience is, what are the needs, and what are the opportunities for us to work with communities to make a difference.
That is so well said. I'm the parent of a rare child who has Mito, and what you said just resonated with me. What we were doing when he was 7 and 8, and now that he's 21, it's like being in a different universe. What we needed then to what we need now is completely different. And the same for him as well, because he's advocating for how he wants his life to look, not so much how his parents want his life to look. So it's so important and so empowering for people to realize that what they have to say is valuable. And that's the part about Mito Action that I love, is that we really are working with our patients to say, you have a horse in this race. You absolutely have a horse in this race. And what you say and what you know, we are the self-taught experts. And when you give us that opportunity to share what we know, and then you can take that and formulate it into how we can help, that's something I dreamt of, 14 years ago. So to me, seeing the pharmaceutical companies blossom into this direction is truly hope-fulfilling for many of us parents, because 10, 15 years ago, that wasn't there. So I really thank you for seeing how those partnerships with the families really do work. So when you are hearing all the stories of those who are isolated, how do you translate that into, this is how we can bring hope back to you? And what are some of the goals of your advocacy team to find these stories and share the stories? Because we need to celebrate the hope, especially within the last few years where we have just seen so many things not go our way in the rare disease world. And working towards, things from legislative all the way through to the pharmaceuticals and educational things, it just seems like things are constantly in turmoil. So what is Rare Family Day, and how are you going to get these stories, and how are we going to get them out there?
I'll let Emil speak to Rare Family Day, and then I can speak to some of the other things that we do to hopefully give people a sense of hope. And that together we can have a brighter future.
All right, thanks, Jessica. And Stephanie, Rare Family Day is something I initiated early on in the life of Ultragenics. And the reason what the day is about is an opportunity for rare disease affected families to bring their whole family to our location and our families, that is our employees and their families, to meet those families. Right. Instead of having a parent bring their child to a big auditorium with all these people staring at them, I want a setting where families meet families, right? Yes. In a kind of a fun setting, an opportunity for all of our employees who don't really interact with patients directly to meet and talk to patients and families directly. And for those families to meet people who work at the company too, right? In all different departments. And so it's an event that was happening once a year, although with the pandemic, it got paused, but we'll get started again. And it's a really great opportunity for everyone at Ultragenics to get connected to what we do and why, and for families to learn about who we are, and why. And I think it's just a great additional type of connection, that you can get everyone in the company to connect to our mission and believe it every day. And that helps us make sure that every day we're making the right decisions by knowing who we're working for.
Exactly. Wow, that's very powerful. I didn't realize that Family Day included all the staff was invited from Ultragenics and their families. That is what a wonderful way to be cohesive and show everybody what you're working towards and who you're, both sides. It just builds bridges so much faster when you put a face and a personality to an email.
Absolutely.
So Jessica, what were you going to say with, how are we going to get these stories? How are we going to get the stories out there? Is there a way Mito Action can help with that? Because I speak with patients 50 hours a week and I hear stories all over.
I think there's lots of different outlets. People can be as engaged as little or as much as they possibly can dream of. So you have, you know, if you look at our ultra rare website, we have lots of patient stories and, you know, people telling their experiences. We have a Facebook page. And those stories have been, you know, we've found those to be one of the most popular things on our website. People like to hear how people's journey has gone, have gone. They see inspiration and hope to see that there are other people like them that are sharing similar struggles and similar triumphs. And everybody has a different path to in their journey. I think the other is, you know, providing opportunities and letting, you know, communities know what the rare disease area is. A big and broad area. You can be an advocate in your particular disease. You can take that to the next level and be an advocate at the state legislature. You can be an advocate at the federal level, thinking about, you know, how does FDA approve rare disease drugs, access issues. There's a whole kind of plethora of opportunities. And we want to be able to help communities know what those opportunities are. It's not for us to dictate what opportunity you should choose. But one of the things we've done this year, we just came off of a webinar with our government affairs team, with the trained in of administration and a new Congress. What are some of those kind of public policy issues? And we had advocates from a variety of different diseases, some who are already actively engaged and some that didn't know that there was that opportunity.
Right.
And so it's looking at those things to really help people understand there's a place for you. Maybe it's learning to be a better advocate when you go to see your provider. Maybe it's being a better advocate with your insurance company as you're fighting to have coverage. Whatever that can be both big and small. And everybody has that capacity. So it's really helping people understand where that opportunity is and on that landscape where they may want to participate.
I like that you're showing everybody that are what doors are available, because some of us might not want door number three, but letting people find comfortably where they want to start and then move their path is a great opportunity for everyone. I found my voice advocating for my son when he was younger through a program in Minnesota called Policy and Partners in Policymaking. And again, I was blown away with how much of a voice I was allowed to have and somewhat expected to have. And I had no idea that I could be able to say to my medical team or an educational team, you know, that's not going to work, or this is what we need, and not be passive, but be a participant. And I think that's so important for, especially for rare disease families, because we have lost so much control over things. And so you giving people the opportunity to take control of something is just truly a gift for them, because we feel so out of control and managed. So I love your advocacy program. I've been all over your ultra rare website. For those of you listening, we will give the website addresses for some of these resources, but just grab a bag of popcorn and dig in, because there is some great information in there that can be translated just about to every disease out there. So that's amazing. So what are some of the innovative ways that you're looking at your advocacy efforts? I know you mentioned you're right in there on social media. What else is out there for your families?
I think the biggest, you know, change that has really evolved and continues to evolve is a term that some people may be familiar with called patient-focused drug development. So as you can imagine, industry for many, many years was built on what a physician thought. And we are seeing a major shift in that, in really trying to understand not just what the physician thinks, but also what patients and care partners think. What does that mean for you? If we were to develop a therapy, how often would you want to take it? What are the things that you're trying to alleviate? Of those five things that you're trying to alleviate, what are the top three most important to you? What are the risks that you're willing to take to participate in a clinical trial? Is the protocol that we're putting together for a clinical trial too burdensome, and how could we make that easier? What are some of the things that we should be providing? Is it childcare? Is it transportation? Is it, you know, two visits a month versus six visits a month? It's all of those kinds of insights that from the earliest days of research to what we hope is a potential therapy, that we understand what the patient community and care partner community's needs are, what their preferences are, what their tolerance for risk and benefit are, looking at issues and really understanding in the environment that you live in, how are you going to take this potential therapy? What complexity does that add to your life, or does that reduce complexity in your life? It really is as simple and as big as you can possibly think. I worked for a company before that they spent an enormous amount of time thinking about the packaging of the product, for example. What they forgot to think about was that the product that it came delivered to their house and they were all excited, oh, we've got this home, you know, it's going to be delivered to your house. But the people that were opening this package were living with severe rheumatoid arthritis and they couldn't open the package. So, you know, that sounds like a very simple thing, but was a huge barrier to that right. community. And so it's understanding things like that that seem in some ways very simplistic to much more, you know, kind of sophisticated things from a actual medication and therapeutic benefit. So that's what I would say. Patient-focused drug development is really opening the world up for both companies like Ultragenyx and patient communities to really partner to understand what is it we're trying to accomplish with a new therapy? What does that look like? What could that look like? And it really requires patient communities to have a seat at the table and really want to participate. And some patient communities are very sophisticated and others are, you know, are evolving. So it's definitely a huge change in the landscape, I would say.
I would say within the MITO community, because we are somewhat emerging with more and more ways to diagnose at a better rate, we're finding more patients now. And we're finding patients at all ages of life. And we're becoming more sophisticated, but at the same time, I feel like we are constantly going through a regrowth where we've been pruned back and now we're regrowing again and eventually we'll be pruned back. But we are definitely no longer just a parent organization. We have so many adults now coming to the table. People like my son who had a life expectancy of 12 to 14, who's now 21. We're seeing our patients because of some of the treatments and just the knowledge in the mitochondrial disease world living longer and thankfully getting into adulthood. So what does that look like? And so again, we're pruning back and saying, okay, we're not just parents asking for help for our kids, but we have young adults, adults, aging adults. What our landscape has completely changed and it's ever evolving. And I like that you are recognizing that sometimes we can be frustrating to work with us patient organizations because sometimes we're not even really sure what we look like some days. And to help us define that so we can come to the table confidently is a real benefit to help us feel like we're being heard. I think that's probably the key thing that Ultragenyx is doing incredibly well is definitely being a gold standard out there for other companies looking at how are they making this impact? How can we model that so we get the same participation? Because we are hearing over and over again from doctors to pharmaceutical companies and researchers that patients and the patient families are the true experts. And I went to school for public health. I am convinced I could pass numerous medical exams at this time. The weird knowledge that I now have brought into my head. I never thought I could compute in metrics and milliliters and all these other things. And I just do it like it's nobody's business. You thought I lived in Europe, but I don't. So going back to some of the other questions I'm curious about, what are things that us rare disease people get to look forward to that Ultragenyx has on the horizon or some peaks behind the door that we can know about?
Well, we're working on a number of new treatments. We actually are working on 20 different diseases right now at the same time.
20?
Yeah, we have.
I didn't know that. Sorry.
In the clinic and six or seven coming to the clinic and another 13 or so in the early stage that we don't really talk about, but we're working on treatments, including gene therapies, traditional protein therapeutics, as well as now an mRNA therapy technology. Excellent. To address all these different diseases. Because there's so many technologies now available, we're actually able to go after some diseases that were not really possible to treat in the past. So I think that's what's changing a lot. We are working on one other disease that affects the mitochondria, which is ornithine transcarbamylase deficiency, a urea cycle defect. Mm-hmm. And that gene therapy is going to be entering phase 3 this year. So our hope would be that we've shown we can improve that disease in our clinical trial. We're heading into a pivotal study. So AAV-based gene therapy is one of those things that could potentially treat other diseases of the mitochondria because it can deliver the gene to more than the liver. We're using the liver primarily, but you can potentially go to other tissues like muscle where there is significant issues for many mitochondrial patients. So I think AAV gene therapy is one of those things that's exciting. The mRNA, LNP, these are basically like fake viruses that you basically take this coding material called mRNA and coat it with some lipid and makes like a fake virus particle. And you can put that particle in, it also delivers the message of how to make a protein into the liver. One thing very good about that technology is you can deliver a lot of the protein into a large fraction of the liver. So potentially is another way you might approach mitochondrial disease that affects certainly the liver. Now, we still need to work and try to improve that delivery to muscle or heart or other tissues. And there's also work on the brain because obviously mitochondrial disorders can affect the brain as well. So that's another way of delivering highly specific enzyme or protein to a specific place. And because it's the mRNA, even if it's a mitochondrial protein, if it gets into the cytoplasm, then your body can kind of target the protein that gets made to put it into the mitochondrion. So I think these new technologies have opened the door to a lot of very specific, powerful treatments. And I'm looking forward to all the things we are doing and others are doing to help transform the treatment of rare genetic diseases.
Wow. I think the other thing I would add, Stephanie, are some of the things that we are doing within the FAOD space. So we have what's called a disease monitoring program, which Emil can speak to. And then there's also an ODYSSEY study. So as you can imagine, with a new therapy available, we still have work to do. We still need to understand more things. And through something like an ODYSSEY study where we're having people living with FAOD that are on therapy, having their medical records looked at back 10 years. That helps inform, you know, the standard of care, earlier diagnosis. What were the procedures that they were having? How has that evolved with the new therapy? So there are all of those kinds of things so that we want to continue to add to the understanding of FAOD. We want to continue to see the care evolve, earlier diagnosis, all of those kinds of things that some of the work that we do once a new therapy is available, that work continues. Right. And it's not just to Emil's point about, you know, new delivery systems and potentially additional new therapies, but also all of the other work that helps, you know, the physician community understand, you know, how the standard of care may have changed. All of those kinds of things that we have some active programs that are not necessarily interventional clinical trials, but are other types of ongoing studies that we're collecting data that really helps inform our understanding of FAOD and kind of the care that's possible and how that can evolve over time.
Wow, I had no idea about the ODYSSEY approach and looking at how they got to their diagnosis and looking at their past records on sort of that unpacking the toy box of, oh, they looked at all these things. And I'm sure you've heard how many misdiagnosis rare disease patients go through before they land on the right one. But I'm sure as you're going through that, you're seeing how they could have got to that potentially wrong answer. My son we were told he had a form of muscular dystrophy. Nope. But you can definitely see how they got there. you know, and again in 2005, which isn't that long ago, but it seems like a lifetime ago in the world of studying a rare disease. We just know so much more. And like you just stated, the technologies have just exploded, and the mindset and I'm every day amazed at the brilliance out there of people figuring this out and who want to be a gene jock and go in there and figure it all out and make those changes. That to me is just fascinating how that's become, you know, sort of the new dream job for so many of our kids in school. And again, I speak with kids all the time who are in programs for genetic counseling, and I don't believe they realize just how impactful that job is for so many families. So, wow, I love that you're actually taking the whole record, not just where you find the patient, but everything prior to, and understanding how they got there so that you can utilize that to inform and develop better practices at the physician level. That's really empowering for people. So if the community who's listening wants to learn more about all of you, let's go through some of your websites. So we have ultragenics.com, correct?
That's our corporate website, yes.
That's your corporate website. And then yes. From there, we obviously can go to clinicaltrials.gov and see where you're at on some of your trials and what you're looking for. But then we have the patient focusing information. And you said that was focus.com or FAOD?
So it's FAOD. It's www.faodinfocus.com.
Okay.
And that is a patient education website that is been informed by the FAOD Patient Leadership Council around the types of resources and information that the community felt that they needed. And we continue to add materials to that website. We then also have the ultra rare patient advocacy website, mm-hmm. which is not disease specific. It covers a variety of the different disease areas that Ultragenics is in. And it also provides some information not just on rare disease in general, and has a number of different kind of patient stories and care partner stories. It has resources on different advocacy groups that are maybe some of umbrella advocacy groups if people want to get involved. So those are kind of the three primary websites that I would say are relevant to the FAOD community.
Excellent. And your ultra rare is really relevant to everybody in the community of rare. That is definitely when there's just tons of information, and looking forward to what's coming next on that around the time of MitoActions conference, which we are really excited to be producing again this year. It was such a wonderful success last year. I was really glad that Dr. Rockley said, hey, let's do it again. So here we go. So as we round out our conversation today, I just want to do a fun little game that I call Speed Round. We just ask fun questions and share some fun answers that aren't too personal, but just kind of fun to answer and kind of realize where we're all from and what we like. So first question is, what is on your nightstand?
Usually my iPhone.
Your iPhone? Okay.
I have my iPhone. I have a heating pad, a stack of books. And for nights when I have insomnia and I can't stop my brain from racing, I have a pad of paper and a pen, because I find if I write it down, then maybe I'll be able to go back to sleep.
Me too. What is your favorite book or music currently?
Well, books or music. There's a lot of music I like, although I think I like a lot of the work of Jackson Browne from a long time ago, just like his songwriting, and a lot of people of that era, frankly. I think that's probably my favorite music, but I do like a lot of different types of music for different purposes. Books, I have to, obviously the last thing I read was a book by Roy Vagelos, who was a scientist physician who also became the head of Merck. And he was someone that focused on doing good and doing well at Merck, and made Merck the most highly regarded company in the world at that time. Mm-hmm. Imagine how far things come then. But I want to read what his story was and what he did those times, just to help guide me in what I'm trying to do.
Excellent.
So from a music perspective, I tend towards the female artists. So Heart is one of my favorite all-time groups.
Yeah.
And probably one of my favorite books is a book called Yellow Raft in the Blue Water. It is written by an author who's no longer alive named Michael Doris. He was married to Louise Erdrich and write a lot about the kind of Native American experience. So that would be my music and one of my favorite books.
Oh, I'm going to definitely look that one up. That sounds very good. So what item are you brand loyal to? You wouldn't even consider buying an alternative. If they didn't have your brand, you just go home without it.
Well, classic Coke in a can.
Yep.
I don't want it in plastic. I don't want it in glass. I don't want it in a fountain. I want the aluminum leaching into the Coke, and I want it right out of the can cold.
Same here. I don't want it in a plastic bottle.
I don't want RC Cola. I don't want Pepsi. I don't want any of the substitutes. I want the real thing.
Exactly. We want the goat, the greatest of all time.
Well, I'm very partial to the Reese's peanut butter cup. The chocolate peanut butter thing, certainly.
So are you fond of
the gourmet versions of it?
The egg? We had a whole thing on this with Mito Action around the holidays, if the Reese's tree or the Reese's egg for Easter, which was the better chocolate to peanut butter ratio. So we all decided it was the egg. I sent everybody like five different versions of Reese's, and then we all had to eat them and compare. It was unanimous. It was the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your favorite meal? Like the one meal you could either go home to or make or just enjoy by yourself. What is it?
Well, it's not one I do as frequently, but right now favorite is freshly smoked salmon. Mm-hmm. Smoker, and it's fresh smoked. It's not dried. Kind of. It's not like lox, but freshly smoked salmon is just, it's incredible when you do it yourself. So that's kind of my favorite right now.
Wow. Sounds like you have some expertise in backyard cooking.
A little bit.
Okay.
I would say mine is steak and a great salad.
Oh yeah. Yep. That's a good one around here too. All right. This one is a little trickier, but so if we were just to take a picture of you just having a wonderfully ordinary day, what would that picture be of?
For me, it would be playing tennis.
Oh, nice.
I guess for me, having enjoying myself, I'd be out on a boat fishing for tuna. So.
Whoa. Okay. I'm in Minnesota. We're happy to find an occasional walleye. So a tuna sounds enormous and hard to do, but that's because we're in Minnesota. And it's snowing and we woke up to snow today. So there's that.
Oh.
Yeah, it's always fun here. Well, thank you guys so much for taking time to be on our podcast. I know that we're hoping to have a part two as we move forward and closer to the FAOD conference this summer in end of July. So hopefully we will all be back together again. I'm sure Kristen will get us all rallied and focused on the next topics. But thank you so much. I'm so excited to keep working with you and partnering with Ultragenics. Again, what you're doing for the rare community is probably larger than you guys actually know, being on the patient side of it. It's just years ago, I would have said hope was a four-letter word. And now I feel like we're actually have hope for our kids. And that's really an awesome feeling. So thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right. Yeah. Have a great day.
Great rest of your day. Stay warm.
Yeah, I will. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Energy in Action. Please check out their websites for more information. There's FAODinfocus.com and also their patient advocacy site, ultrarareadvocacy.com. There you will be able to find all the resources we have discussed today, and those resources will be available on our show notes as well. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps boost us up the charts. This show was brought to you by Zogenix. Be sure to join us next week for all things Mito. This is your host, Stephanie. Have a great week.